It's the Fulhamist Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name is George Cooper and welcome to the show. What the hell did we just witness? That was quite something at Bramall Lane. No defending, just vibes. Rodrigo Muniz writing himself into Fulham folklore with that elusive bicycle kick. He's attempted it so many times before, but my God, did he deliver in dramatic fashion. We've got so much to go through. What the hell was that? It was just the most ridiculous game of the season, but one that we will remember for a long time, I'm sure. Joining me today is the one and only Jack Shradley. How you doing, mate?
Hi, mate. You all right?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm also joined by Dom Betts. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. Still just about surviving after yesterday.
Good trip to Sheffield?
Apart from the game, it was all right.
What happened, mate?
Well, I'm a man of my word, because I said before the game, if Oliver Burnley scores, I'm leaving.
The second goal
goes in, I was like, no, I've had enough of this. Then I was just coming out the toilet and I heard the whole VAR decision with the third goal, and then the mate was given, I was like, nah. When I got to the pub and saw the equaliser on a stream on my phone.
You cannot write it. What was your reaction when you saw that overhead kick go in? Are you a man of principles and you're like, I don't care, I sucked my
guns? Yeah, as I said, just because we didn't get the winner, I'm fine with it. But I said, my record when I am there, when I'm not there this season, is becoming a joke now. Like, I've missed us beat United, I've missed us beat Arsenal, I've missed us beat Tottenham, I've missed us beat West Ham, I've missed us beat Brighton. And I'm pretty sure if I stayed there, we probably would have lost 5-1. So...
So you're a bad omen, Dom. Are you banishing yourself from all away trips?
Be happy. I'm not going to the next. I'm going on Forest, but we'll probably get back to winning ways against Newcastle on Saturday when I'm not there.
Oh, I'm going to Forest. Ever consider just staying at home for that one, Dom?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
We also got Lizzie Barnard with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I'm doing good.
Nice one. You got some 3-word reviews for us as well. If I'm
I do.
Not mistaken.
Yeah, they're all around the same theme, about like the most insane goal in the 93rd minute of the match. So I'll start with random Fulham stuffs, which should have a math symbol in, but I've like translated into English. So scissors defeats blades, which I liked a lot. And then nice. Andrew Stevens, a little sort of like the wrong way round maybe, but bicycle punctures blades. So like you wouldn't think that. Fulham Lilies with maybe a sentiment that Dom shares, but maybe not, shouldn't have left. And then Jack and Loz, our friends, with ridiculous bicycle revolution.
No, I thought we'd get my decision. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not? You missed one of the best goals.
Because it meant we got the result. I'm telling you, if I stayed, that's not happening. No chance. Absolutely right. No chance.
Well, we'll come on to the goal, I'm sure. But I just wanted to talk initially about just how Fulham approached this game, Jack. It was, should we say, pretty dull first half. We had 70% possession. Sheffield United going down, you know, they've conceded 24 goals in their past 5 home matches in all competitions. I mean, was it a bit of overconfidence, maybe a bit of arrogance? Like, what do you think we were lacking in that first half, Jack?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely tell the difference between the two sides in terms of the fact, obviously, they're down the bottom and they look like they're going to go down compared to us, who are obviously in mid-table. You could kind of see that difference in quality. Fulham, you know, controlled a lot of possession without really creating an awful lot. The only chance I really remember is Rodrigo Muniz, who hit the post. It was he done really well to get the ball and get the shot off. But yeah, Fulham just lacked something in that first half. And you know, I don't think anyone expected there to be 6 goals at halftime after how just drab that first half was. But yeah, I remember thinking at halftime, you know, Fulham, we're in control. You know, maybe we'll nick a goal and it'll just be, you know, a pretty boring game, but our quality will just shine through. And, you know, how wrong I was.
Yeah, we're certainly not expecting what unfolded. I mean, Lizzie, do you think that maybe we didn't give Sheffield the respect that they deserved? There were a few little sort of incidences of showboating from the Fulham side in the early stages. Muniz attempting a Rabona, little trick passes from Andreas Pereira, and I guess kind of maybe we felt that we would just rock up and it would be, you know, Sheffield would roll over and it'd be an easy victory.
I don't think that necessarily they deserve a whole load of respect considering the performances they've put in, especially at Bramall Lane this season. Their last few games at Bramall Lane, they've lost to nil with ridiculous score lines. So I don't know necessarily if we needed to offer them more respect, but I think we were quite lacking. Like, it wasn't about the opposition, but we just didn't have that silky quality that we've had in games like against Spurs and against Brighton. And it suited them a bit that it was a little bit of a jerky game at points, I thought.
Dom, what were your feelings going into halftime? Were you glad you made the trip up?
I said it to multiple people that after going to both England friendlies, I didn't think I could find a game more boring, but that was the first half yesterday. Because it felt like a friendly. There was no sort of intensity to either team in that first half. We were sort of keeping the ball, but not really doing much with it. And as you said, there was a bit of showboating, as you can say, with the Rabona from Muniz, the sort of back heel onto his leg pass from Andreas Pereira. And there was sort of just no intensity to the play in the first half, I thought. It seemed like a game where both teams kind of know where they're going to be. Sheffield United know they're going down. We know the best we can probably do is maybe push for top 10. I know if eighth place gets a European play season, you could potentially push for that. But yeah, it felt like a game that it wasn't a must win for either team. I know Sheffield United can still technically stay out mathematically, but you know they're pretty much resigned to going down. So that's what it felt like. That's what it felt like in the first half. And then it sort of kicked into life in a second. But I said it was a very strange game from minute one to minute 104. It was just a very, very odd game. It did have a very like end of the season, last game of the season feel where both teams just don't really care, and they're in the second half especially and going all gung ho for it.
There was a moment of real quality that came through via Rodrigo Muniz, and not this is a kick goal, where he nearly pulled off what arguably would have been one of the greatest headers the Premier League has ever seen, Jack. I mean, do you think that at that stage in the game, if Fulham do go ahead, we just go on to just, you know, dominate and win comfortably? Could that have been a bit of a turning point that would have prevented the chaos that ensued later on?
I think there's definitely an argument for that, because I mean, even in the second half, it was kind of very similar to the first in the early stages, where Fulham controlled a lot of the ball, albeit not creating an awful lot. And yeah, it was a wonderful ball in, and Rodrigo Muniz does really well with the header. It's looping, the keeper's beat, and it's just really, really unlucky. And I don't think if Tosin makes the mistake that he does, you know, for the first goal, that the game ends as mental as it did. So yeah, I think there's definitely an argument to be had that if the shot was a couple of inches to the left and went in, you know, Fulham probably run out, you know, comfortable 1-0, maybe 2-0 winners.
Let's come on to Sheffield's first. I mean, I think all three of their goals came from some very sloppy defending, quite frankly, from our back line. Dom, you said that you promised that you'd leave if McBurnie got a goal. How are you feeling after he assisted Brereton Diaz's goal?
I was getting there. This is a common theme, actually, with Marco Silva over the last sort of two or three seasons. I do feel like most of the goals we concede are usually our own fault. I think a lot of the goals we seem to concede isn't loads of individual quality sometimes from the opposition. It's often, especially when we're facing teams sort of in and around us or in the bottom half of the table, it always seems we gifted them goals. And it's just an easy goal for them to get to put away. And although they've been absolutely terrible this season, Sheffield United, you know, Ben Brereton Diaz is someone I wouldn't have minded us going in for in the January transfer window in regard to numbers up top. And obviously it was a very easy finish for him once McBurnie whipped the ball in. But yeah, when it went in, I was like, oh, here we go again. I'm at a game and Fulham absolutely going to turn up and do this. But I said, we bounced back pretty quickly. But I mean, the goal seemed to wake us up for about 2 minutes, and then we decided, oh no, actually we're back in the game now and we're back comfortable. But as Jack was mentioning, I do think if we score first, it's a completely different game, because, you know, them going ahead the 2/3 times they did, it gave the crowd a bit of an oomph that, oh, they're not getting battered 5-0 this time. But I think if we scored first, we could have easily have ended up winning the game sort of 3-0 or 3-1. So, yeah, I think it was... But I think it was quite weird in regard to the first goal being it should have been a sort of a sign of things to come. And then most of the goals we conceded end up being sort of in a similar passage of play. But I said it... We're so comfortable in the league table. I think that you can sort, it can be forgiven. But I said it did feel like we, especially in their start that second half, we had our foot off the gas a little bit.
Jack, where do you think it went wrong for us defensively yesterday? Because this unit has been so impressive these last few games. You look at, you know, clean sheets against Tottenham and the like, and yet yesterday we looked so exposed, and you know, Brereton Diaz finding the space between Robinson and Bassey time and time again. And it was just, every time Sheffield went ahead, they looked like they, you know, could have scored. What were the things that popped up that sort of didn't click?
I think just, you know, you kind of touched on it earlier, maybe, you know, just arrogance or, you know, a bit of lapses in concentration. As you touched upon as well, obviously every single goal seemed to be kind of a ball across the box, and, you know, you're looking at either Robinson or Bassey, who's marking the man at the back post, you know, and all three of them are pretty simple finishes for either Brereton Diaz or McBurnie. Leno can't really do too much about any of them, really. I think another thing as well that's important is obviously we took off Lukic for Adama Traore after we equalised, and I thought Adama Traore was fantastic, but it meant that we moved Alex Iwobi into the middle, and I think that there's maybe an argument that we, you know, physically we lost it a little bit there when Iwobi went into the middle with Joao Palhinha, and that just, you know, gave Sheffield United that little bit of an oomph. And you know, once they made it 3-1, we took Iwobi off for TC, and yes, I know we were kind of, you know, we had to chuck everything at it, but you know, TC was, you know, instrumental in the midfield in terms of that comeback. But in terms of the defensive side of things, yeah, I think it was just some lapses in concentration, and you know, maybe moving Iwobi into the middle of the park wasn't the best idea in hindsight.
Yeah, it was an interesting one because I agree with you, Jack, that taking off Lukic and putting Iwobi in the middle just did not work at all. We lost all of the structure in the middle. But then I would argue that the substitutions that followed, the likes of Tete, Bobby Dekker's over Reed, and Kearney coming on, just dragged us right back into it. And I guess Lizzie just shows what depth we have in this squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we can't change a winning lineup, but I think perhaps those players starting would have made a bit more sense yesterday. It was a very different game to Tottenham. They deserved much less of our respect, and I think we could have had a much more attacking lineup. Like, I would have liked to have seen Kearney in the middle from the beginning, for example. And yeah, as soon as Kearney and BDR came on, Kearney assisted BDR, and we were 3-2 down and on our way to scoring the equaliser. So for sure, they definitely changed the game.
I just want to talk quickly, Lizzie, about Joao Palhinha header. I mean, like, how he is left unmarked in the position that he is just criminal. Like, at this level of football, no excuses for it whatsoever. He took it really well. And obviously the celebration, typical Joao passion coming through. I mean, where do you stand with Joao at the minute, man? Because he's still just delivering time and time again, and you see him celebrate like that, and it gives you that glimmer of hope of, like, could he be staying? And I'm just wondering where you sit on this argument. Are you sort of doomed and you know, think he's going to be off in the summer, or do you think there's a chance that he might stay?
Oh, I fully believe he's staying. I don't care if it's delusional. Like, I think he's staying. I think he's going to stay for years and years and years. That header was so interesting, and watching it back, he keeps both his feet on the floor. Like, he doesn't even have to jump for it. That's how shocking the defending is. And I think it's a bit like the Adoy goal that we scored in the semi-final against Derby. Apart from that, there aren't any defenders around him and he doesn't have to jump. But it's that, like, front post flick on. Yeah, really, really enjoyable.
And Dom, I mean, like, our equaliser didn't last long. Sheffield got themselves back in front very quickly afterwards. It was a Timothy Cassagna foul which gave away the free kick, and then just a bit of quick thinking from Sheffield, I guess, taking it quickly. Again, your favourite player, McBurnie, sorting home. Was that just Fulham just being caught napping, or was it just quick thinking from Sheffield?
I think you've got to look at it bit of both, really. I think, yes, it's quick thinking, but, you know, Fulham have got to be on their feet and react to it a lot better than they did. And, you know, when we equalise, you'd expecting us to get control of the game and sort of move into the ascendancy and push for us to go 2-1 up. And that didn't happen. I said they got the free kick after a foul from Castagna, and it was quick thinking, and then McBurnie put the ball in the back of the net. But I said it, and then even... And once that happened, you thought, oh, we might react back to that. And it didn't happen. You know, they obviously got the third very soon after that. And obviously, they potentially could have had a fourth if Vinny Souza didn't drift into play from an offside position. But yeah, I think throughout the game, not just for the goals, but there was just moments where there was lapsing concentration. And maybe it was because it was the opposition. If they were playing like a Tottenham or a Brighton, they might have been more switched on because they feel like they need to build themselves up for this game, and maybe they felt like going to this game that they should sort of steamroll Sheffield United, which didn't happen. So yeah, I think throughout the park, and you know, from across the team until those sort of late substitutions were made, I think they although it did make an impact, as I said, I think we could have gone for a more attacking lineup, and then we wouldn't have probably got into these situations because we might have attacked more, we did attack in the first half as such, but created more sort of clear cut opportunities maybe, and that would have got. But yeah, so I think it was, as much as you can say, it's a quick thing for Sheffield United, we've got to react better.
Yeah. Also, following the goal, one of the funniest knee slides I've ever seen from McBurnie. Did anyone else catch that?
I caught it on the screen in the stadium, and my head was just so far gone. The fact we conceded a Premier League goal to Ollie McBurnie, and that he couldn't even do a knee slide afterwards.
Nasty piece of work that lad. Anyway, moving swiftly on again. Sheffield just put themselves even further ahead, half across from deep. I mean, I have to admit, it was just a peach of a delivery, really. And, you know, Diaz again popping up. Jack, anything that could have been done about that one? Or was it just a very good ball and you know, good delivery and a good finish?
I kind of touched on it earlier. All three goals are very similar, and the ball's at the back post, and you may be potentially arguing where's Bassey, where's Robinson, but it's a fantastic ball from Gus Hamer. He's a player who I really like, and actually in the summer I wouldn't have minded if Fulham would have gone in for him. He had a really good season at Coventry, and when he went to Sheffield United, I thought that's a bit of a steal, and I think he's been a little bit of a standout in a really poor Sheffield United side, and just that little bit of quality that, you know, over the course of the season they maybe have lacked. But yeah, in terms of the goal, sorry, I won't talk about my Hamer obsession anymore, but it is a really good ball into the back post. But yeah, maybe potentially they could have done a bit better in terms of marking.
Yeah, and what the chaos that followed, Lizzie, Bassey seemed to be standing over Bernd Leno, who was collapsed in a heap at the bottom. And then there was a lot of kind of back and forth, obviously, and then there was an extensive VAR check to see whether there'd been any foul play. It was kind of like, it looked like a fight, but then it wasn't the fight at all. It was just all a bit strange. What was your take when you were watching it?
Yeah, it wasn't a fight, and then there was a VAR check, and the commentators said, well, the commentary team did get quite a lot wrong, so I'm not 100% sure this is right. They said it was Leno who was having a red card check on him, and I was like, Leno? Really? But yeah, I imagine like the...
Not burnt.
Well, the frustration of the afternoon was definitely bubbling over at that point. Like, you could tell that the Fulham players were really frustrated about, you know, what had happened, what we'd allowed to happen.
Yeah, see, it was just a bit strange. Obviously, like, it took forever for then the goal was being checked, and it just kind of... It was a weird one because it was like the delay, and then obviously they Sheffield got their fourth goal disallowed. It's kind of like allowed that space for the extra time for us to then get back into the game. It was just a bit odd. Dom, speaking of the fourth disallowed goal, do you agree with the decision? Do you feel like player was interfering with play, blocking Leno's line of sight? Because I know a few of the Sheffield United fans were seemingly unhappy about it. Wilder was furious in his post-match conference. Did you guys see that, by the way? It was quite an unusual interview. He was like, I'm not going to stand there as a hard-working Yorkshire lad and allow the FA to take my money off me in fines for what I've said, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. And then the interview was like, oh, bloody hell, where did that come from? Like, touch a nerve, did I, Chris? But yeah, Dom, what was your take on it?
So, my opinion on it is, but by the letter of the law, yes, it's offside. but I don't think these sort of offsides really should be given in regard to like the way a game plays. But by the letter of the law, which is obviously what the referee's going by, I think it is offside. But I don't really want to see goals disallowed for stupid rubbish like that, to be honest.
So you think it should have stood?
Well, no, I think it should have been disallowed in regard to what the law is. I just think in general, I don't think goals like that should be ruled because of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I get where you're coming from.
Like, as in my opinion as a fan, I can go in general, I don't think things like that should be given as offside. But by a letter of the law and what the referee has to go off, then yeah, it was disallowed for the right reasons.
I did not think it was offside. Like, I mean, obviously, Vinny Souza is in an offside position. But if you watch where Leno is looking and where McBurnie is, he's not actually interfering with his line of sight. Like, McBurnie's goal is coming from the other side of the goal. And, like, maybe I've just got it really wrong. And if I was a Sheffield United fan, I would be absolutely furious. They're not going to stay up anyway, so it, like, won't matter. But imagine they were a little bit closer and that was the goal, that the 3 points that they would have got. I thought it was a goal. I thought we were so extremely lucky to get away with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's why not huge deal has been made out of it. If we were playing like Luton, Everton or Nottingham Forest, I think, or even Burnley, because I don't think Burnley are completely out of it. I think they will go down, but I don't think they're not out of sight like Sheffield United are. And I think there might have been more of a big deal made about it, but I think just because of where Sheffield United are, it's sort of been glossed over. Like, if you look on the Sky Sports YouTube channel and the sort of 2 or 3 minute highlights they put up, it's not even on there. Which I thought was crazy. But I think, like I said, I think it's, by the letter of the law, I can see why it's been disallowed, but I don't think goals, from a footballing fan perspective, as much as you might think I don't like football with the amount of goals I miss, but I don't want to see goals disallowed for reasons like that, but it worked in our favour and sort of, because I think if that goes in, then it is game done.
Yeah, we got a bit of luck on that one, I think. We can all kind of agree. I mean, but I tell you what wasn't lucky, that Bobby Decker over Reed finish. He'd only been on the pitch for a matter of moments. And I mean, Jack, what an impact that man has. I think personally, our second best finisher in this side, bar Muniz, and I'm talking like hot streak Muniz, not pre-hot streak Muniz. But I mean, just that, how important is he can, we can always rely on Bobby Decker Devery to pop up with a goal when we need it. And how important do you think he is to this side?
Yeah, I was saying it on the way back to Sheffield train station yesterday to a couple of mates that, you know, in terms of like a quote unquote big moment player, Bobby Reid, you know, more often than not, is there to step up and, you know, gets a goal when it's needed. Obviously, there was yesterday, he scored the winner at Goodison Park. There was obviously Arsenal at home as well this season. You know, I'm sure there's countless others that I'm missing as well. And, you know, it's a good ball from Kenny. I kind of mentioned him a little bit earlier in terms of how crucial he was when he came on. Bobby Reid, one touch, and then his second touch, it's a really, really good finish into the bottom corner. And I think obviously a lot of the plaudits is going to be to a goal that we'll get onto in a minute. But I do think that the Bobby Reid finish is a really, really good one, and one that, you know, probably does deserve quite a lot of credit.
I mean, like in any other game, it would have been the goal of the match, the main talking point, but let's come on to it. We put it off for not long enough. I mean, Lizzie, it never has a goal been written in the stars more. And like we did say in the Spurs, in the post-Spurs game, that, you know, that's going to be what it takes, him to finally land one of these elusive bicycle kicks. And I genuine tear in my eye when that came off. I could not believe it. And to do it in the last minute in that fashion, I mean, surely one of the all-time sort of Fulham folklore, streets won't forget, whatever you want to call it, goals that will be talked about for generations.
I can't believe he's managed it. I can't believe it. If you told me 3 months ago that Rodrigo Muniz is going to score a bicycle kick, it would have been insane. And it was such a skillful take as well. I've watched it back like probably more times than I'd care to admit. But it comes in at a height where he can't get it with his foot if he's standing upright, and he can't get it with his head. So he has to go, but he doesn't go upside down. He goes to the side to get it around the defender, which I think is Mason Holgate, but I'm not 100%, to get it around the defender to get it into the goal, all with the power from the cross. Incredible. Amazing. I just wish I'd been in the away end to experience it.
Dom, I've not really heard your take on this whole Muniz thing. Obviously, we've been talking about it for weeks in the podcast now, with the performances that he's been putting in. But I mean, the big question is, hot streak, or is he just prodigiously talented and we're starting to wake up to it? I'm just curious as to where you stand on this particular debate.
I said, when it comes to Rigo Muniz, obviously, when he came in, and it was that season in the Championship when he was sort of understudy to Mitrovic, and whenever he came on, his minutes to goal ratio probably was probably decent. And then obviously he's had games before he sort of started his hot streak. But I said, when it first started, you sort of say hot streak, and is it just Pavel Pogrebnyak at part two? But then if he keeps scoring, then he's becoming not in regard to, oh, he's just on a hot streak, whereas now next season he's going to be our number one striker type thing. Because before you started Hostry, you would have said, oh, we need to sign a striker in January in this summer, which I do think we need to do anyway. Because, you know, Jimenez is all right as a backup. I think we need a better option there. But yeah, I think he scored more goals than anyone else in the Premier League in 2024 or something stupid like that. So it's not really a hot streak now. We're sort of getting into April now. So, but as long as he continues this, I mean, I found it remarkable that, you know, Fulham's best Brazilian player was not the Fulham player in the Brazil squad for the friendly against England. But yes, it's the technique on it, because he's got to time that to absolute perfection, because that could have ballooned out of the ground if he mistimes it. But the connection is so good away from the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper can't really do anything about it. And it was about time, after him trying it for the last sort of three seasons, one of these to actually come off.
Yeah, no, it's poetry, pure poetry. And just to touch on your point about most Premier League goals since the turn of the year, you occasionally see these like graphics on Twitter go around, and it would be like top goal scorers across Europe's five leagues, and it's like Kylian Mbappe, Lewandowski, Rodrigo Muniz, and it's like nothing fills me with more joy than just seeing his name up amongst the some of the all-time
greats. It's like that meme where they're all having that meeting and the blokes are sat in a chicken costume.
Oh, what, the Big Bird one?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, long may it continue. And he's just such a seemingly like such a lovely guy, and you can tell that all of the entire team are just rooting for him so much. That was that amazing photo. I think if I'm not mistaken, this lad called Jack Cox on Twitter, who posed with his little brother outside Bramall Lane, and Muniz has got the little one on his shoulder, and he's got his arm around, and he's got the biggest smile. You can just tell like how happy he is. And yeah, I just love the guy. I absolutely love the guy. And Jack, do you think that he's venturing into the kind of territory of there are going to be bigger teams that are going to be sniffing around for him? Or I like to think that hopefully he loves Fulham so much that it's not even going to be kind of considered. But are we in? Because people are starting to take notice, you know, like they're getting talked about on like football outlets across the world. People know the name Rodrigo Muniz now, which is crazy to say given where we were with him about 6 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that is the only minuscule negative in this sudden upturn in Rodrigo Muniz's form, is the fact of, you know, he's scoring at such a ridiculous rate that people are going to start drawing attention to him. Do I think there's going to be interest? I mean, again, it's all kind of relative between now and the end of the season. If he doesn't score another goal between now and the end of the season, which, by the way, I don't think is going to happen, then, you know, maybe people will think, oh, it's a bit of a purple patch. I don't think it is a purple patch. I think that it's not the fact that he's just scoring goals. I think his performance is really just solid Premier League number nine performances. So I'm sure there will be a little bit of interest, but I mean, if I can't see him going, I can't envision it, and I don't really want to think about it, to be honest with you. I think if he left now, after Mitrovic left as well, I don't think I could ever love a footballer again.
Yeah, once bitten, twice shy and all that. After the raptures that ensued following that goal, Fulham actually had an incredible chance to go on to win the game. A well-worked corner falling to Tom Kenny just on the inside of the area on his left foot. Lizzie, he's got to bury that, surely. Or are you kind of thinking it's a harder chance than we're all making it out to be?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think it's harder than people are saying. Like, I'd heard about this insane Tom Kearney miss, and then I watched it and I was like, oh, it was just that. I thought it could be, you know, I think people may be going a bit overboard about how much better he had to be doing with that. But like, he's Tom Kearney. We know he's got an amazing left foot. I think he could have buried it. And obviously that would have been quite underserved, but just the most insane end to the game. It wasn't to be. It's okay.
I think part of the reaction to it, and tell me if you agree with this, Jack, is that because it's Tom and because we've seen him in that situation before, I'm thinking, you know, the goal that he got last minute in the Championship against Leeds, we know that he's so capable of it and he's so composed. And I would argue if that is going to fall to anyone in that particular scenario, you would probably say I'd want it to fall to Tom, which I guess maybe makes it feel like more of a miss than if it had, you know, fallen to someone else. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point to make on that. His left foot can be a bit of a wand, especially in these, you know, in these moments. And you know, those were in the away end, but it felt like as the ball went to him, everyone was kind of gearing up, ready to celebrate. We'd all just kind of assumed the ball was going to kind of hit the back of the net, and he seemed to just scuff it, and it was just, and then he was you could tell he was on the floor with his head in his hands for a good 15-20 seconds afterwards. He knew that he should have done better with the chance. And I mean, yeah, as you kind of touched on, is if we would have scored it, it would have been a bit of a smash and grab, and I think it would have been maybe the funniest just away game possibly ever been to.
Another mental game at Bramall Lane after, was it the 4-3 the other year?
Yeah. Yeah, when Seth scored the hat-trick.
I would have loved that even more, knowing that Dom was watching it on a phone in a pub. Had that caught Tom Kenny. Well, how would you have reacted if that had happened? I would never have let you forget that.
I would have had FOMO if we'd won the game, but I think because we drew the game, I was still fine with my decision to go to the pub.
Sure, he says through gritted teeth. Dom, let's assume that Sheffield are going down. It's looking, you know, more and more likely. Is there anyone in that team that catches your eye? You said earlier that you like to look at Brereton Diaz. Sammy's been tooting that horn for a long, long time. I think he's a very tidy player, the Chilean legend. Is there anyone else in that side that catches the eye that you would take, you know, in the situation that they go down?
I think Gus Harmer, as Jack alluded to earlier on, I think as he said, he's someone I looked at, but we should be looking at going into the going into this season. And I think I found it quite remarkable that other Premier League teams weren't in for him or Victor Gyökeres, and one's end up going to Sporting for what is it, 25 mil, and will probably be sold for like 60 or 70 mil when he moves on either this summer or next summer. But yeah, Gus Harmer's only sort of one I'm looking at. And I mean, if you look at Sheffield United, analyse it, they got promoted and lost their two best players. But when does that ever happen, that a promoted team gets worse when they go up? But I'll be looking at Gus Harmer, and that's probably about it. There's not really anyone else in there I think's even really Premier League quality. Oh, and if we did sign on him at Burnley, I might have to just throw my seat to get away.
Yeah, I don't think there's any danger of that. It doesn't really fit the vibe at Fulham, that man, does he? Lizzie, final words, any standout performances? Obviously, we've spoken about Muniz, but is there anyone else you want to give an honourable mention to?
Is it a bit boring to say I don't think so? Obviously, Tom Kenny was great when he came on, but I think generally across the pitch we were a little bit lackluster yesterday, and in the first half we should have won it, and in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the second half we also should have won it, and it was down to the team underperforming across the park really that we didn't.
Fair enough. I mean, Jack, how are you feeling about it? Because we're at a stage of Fulham, by the way, somehow still 12th. I don't understand how this is happening. We're just completely rooted to that position, and we will finish 12th, and we will not move up.
I feel like us and Chelsea have been 11th and 12th for like the last 6 months.
Yeah, isn't it? It's just hit pause on the table. It's just like, you know, that particular section is just frozen in time. But I'm kind of thinking, all right, it was a very, very, very entertaining, strange game of football. And we're fortunate enough to be in a position where we're not looking over our shoulder. We're not really in Europe, let's be perfectly honest. So we can just sort of sit back and just enjoy good games of football like this. Yeah, it's disappointing we didn't get the win, but ultimately, I think I probably would have rather have taken a nutty 3-3 with a Muniz scissor kick than a Fulham 1-0 snooze fest. I know that sounds mad, but do you get where I'm coming from?
It was just an absolute just vintage like Barclays game of football. It was maybe one of the worst games of football I've seen, but also just one of the funniest. Like I just found myself just laughing like kind of every 10-15 minutes, and you know, walking out the ground, and I just looked at my mates, and I was like, that was just so fun. Like even at 3-1 down, like it was a bit annoying, but I was just a bit like, it's fine. I think you can kind of, you never want to see a team lose, but you know, we would have 2 seasons ago, we would have killed to have been in a position where, you know, by, you know, end of March, we're in the Premier League, and it the results obviously they do matter, but like it's not the be all and end all. And I think that, you know, we're in a position now where we should just kind of, you know, enjoy it, because there's so often in football, you know, you're worrying about teams above you and teams below you, and you know, things can change so quickly. So just kind of just enjoy just a couple of months of where it doesn't particularly matter too much. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the 5-3 at the end of last season, where it was just the most just bonkers just end of season Barclays football like you've just ever seen.
Yeah, I had that noted down as well. Willian scoring direct from a free kick because the goalkeeper didn't like perceive that the ball might bounce. Insane game. And this is very much the same vibes.
Yeah. I'd say I reckon there's at least one batshit game to come this year. I'm looking at, I think that we could genuinely have a big say in the title race as well, because obviously we've got to welcome both Liverpool and Man City at Craven Cottage. They'll have everything to play for. We're just the lone horse at the National wreaking havoc.
Yeah, but I'm more than happy to let Man City beat us if it stops Liverpool and Arsenal winning the league.
We've been over this, though. I personally would rather see someone else win, right? And I know it's because you've got a load of Arsenal mates.
Liverpool or Arsenal.
But you're rooting that in the fact that you've got mates who are Arsenal fans and they're going to be insufferable. Like as a, can you not separate that from like as a team, as a club, as a, you know, as a footballing entity? It might be nice
That's not how my brain works, mate, I'm afraid. I said I don't want other people being happy.
I really hope it is Arsenal.
Yeah.
Because if it is Arsenal, we can say that we took 4 points off the champions, like, all of next year.
I want Arsenal to lose the league by exactly 4 points.
That would also be sweet enough.
Anyway.
And like, I don't want the Klopp goodbye fest to be in winning the league. No, thank you very much. So I guess it's going to have to be Man City. But I think it's because I just don't know any Man City fans. So if they win stuff, it just generally does not bother me at all.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. Well, let's focus on the mid-table mediocrity, shall we? That'll do for part one. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back with some of your questions and a little preview of Nottingham Forest. Hello. Now, before we get on to part two of this episode of Fulhamish, just a quick announcement that Fulhamish are going to be live once again at the Half Moon in Putney on Saturday, the 27th of April, after the Crystal Palace game. We are going to be joined, and I can't quite believe we're saying this, by legendary football journalist, the one and only Paddy Barkley. So you do not want to miss out on this. We'll be analysing the game at Crystal Palace, answering some of your questions, and we're going to have a very special edition of This Will Catch On. You really don't want to miss it. If you fancy coming along, tickets are available via a link in the description. So that's Saturday, the 27th of April, after the Crystal Palace game, live at the Half Moon, Putney. See you there. Welcome back. It's the Fulhamish Podcast. George here. I'm joined by Jack, Dom and Lizzie. Thank you very much to everyone who got in touch with some questions. Loads actually coming in. A lot of them Mooners themed, as you would imagine. I'm going to throw this one to you, Lizzie, because you had a little point on this earlier. Is Marco's insistence on players earning their place back preventing us from setting up tactically correctly for the competition at hand? I'm thinking of Paulinho not starting after suspension and Lukic getting the nod over Reed or TC versus Blades. What's your take on this? We have spoken about this kind of general area. First of all, let's unpick this bit. Do you believe that Tom Kearney would have been a more adequate starter against Sheffield and could have influenced the game? We saw how good he was when he came on. And yeah, are you for Marco Silva's integrity when it comes to his principles in earning your place back? Or do you think he should be a little bit more fluid and take each game on a case by case?
It's so difficult because I'm neither a manager or a psychologist. And I could totally understand what would happen if we changed the starting lineup that we played against Spurs. That team dominated a team that was fourth, fifth in the league, played exceptionally. There's no player that deserved to lose their place. And when you think about bringing Kearney in, I can't say that any of those players deserve to be dropped, honestly. But yeah, I think there is definitely an inflexibility in terms of the lineup and that policy. And I understand why it's not changed. And I think now, if he was to start deciding to, you know, bring players in based on his tactical setup, it would cause a little bit of havoc. I don't know. It's so difficult to say. I would like him to be a bit more fluid, but I think he would have to have a policy of fluency from the beginning. So I'm not quite sure how he starts that now.
No, I get where you're coming from. It's a very, very diplomatic answer. But yeah, I think it's, my opinion is I'm all for the silver principles. He's taken us thus far, and in Marco we trust. So let's more of the same, please. Just on the note of TC, Jack, we got a question here from Fulham Fan News, who asks, how good was TC when he came on? He didn't hide, got his foot on the ball, and was ultimately the catalyst in the comeback, along with Adama. With Forest only a couple of days away, do we bring TC and Adama in from the start? Some interesting things there. There's been a bit of conversation about Adama. I mean, he's just been such good value coming on in off the bench. And there's the age-old debate of whether he is too good to bench or too like at his best when running at tired legs. What do you reckon? Could you see Marco mixing it up for Forrest, or do you think we'll see much of the same?
I mean, it wouldn't shock me if I made a couple of changes. You know, as much as we've, you know, banging about the Rodrigo Muniz bicycle kick and how much it was a fun game of football, you know, ultimately we did concede 3 goals, you know, on another day, 4 to the worst side in the league. So it wouldn't surprise me if we did change it, especially given the fact that it's only a couple of days away. In terms of Adama Traore, I wouldn't start him, not necessarily because I don't think he's good enough, because I think he's been fantastic for us, but he's so fantastic at what he does. And, you know, as much as I'm sure he'd rather start, you know, he is just such a bully. And when he comes on, he's the last player you want to see. You know, when you've got tired legs, 15, 20 minutes to go, he comes on the pitch and bullies you. TC, I wouldn't be against starting in against Forest. And then in terms of another change, maybe you look at maybe Tete in for Castagna, just because I thought Tete, when he came on, was really strong, really physical and got us up the pitch. And Castagna's been good for us this season, but it was maybe a bit of an off day, and maybe, you know, some fresh legs and a slight change around isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, we got a few more questions on Traore. Dom Lando asks, putting aside Muniz, Adama Traore has played 75 minutes of football in 3 games, had 2 assists and 1 goal. His transformation from a good player with no end product to super sub is being overlooked because others have been playing so well. Has this been our best Premier League transfer window? I mean, what do you think? The personnel that we brought in have all just been incredible. You know, Iwobi, Castagna, Adama Traore, even Jimenez. I know he didn't start very well, but he did hit that rich vein of form. And we were all, at a collective head loss after the end of this transfer window. And I mean, do you think that we're sort of coming to realise that perhaps it wasn't so bad after all?
Yeah, I think in general, most of Marco Silva's signings have worked in across the board in the last few seasons. I think if you're looking at our best transfer window, I think you've got to put it up there in regard to the money we've made. In regards, I still think we're sort of 20, 30 million pounds in, probably with, once we've paid Chelsea the Brozier money, we're probably about 15, 20 million pounds in profit as well in this season. So I think if you're taking everything into account, you've got that as well. I mean, Brozier's the only one who hasn't really worked. You know, there's been a few moments where we thought we were a bit light, but if you look at our team when everyone's fit, it's probably the best depth we've had in maybe ever in the Premier League. I think if you looked when everyone's fit and you look at our bench, for example, the game after Paulinho's first game back where he didn't start, I think if you look at benches, like you probably said it's one of our Putnam's best ever benches, and I'm not saying that's something we should be looking at, but in regard to the depth we've now got in the squad and the fact we've made money this season in regard to the Mitrovic money, it is looking very, very good, and I'm hoping that means that we're not saying we're going to go big in the summer, but we're going to invest properly into this team by spending the money to sort of push us into the top half of the table.
You said earlier that you feel like we still do need a striker. Is there anyone that sort of would jump out that could be a viable option? And when you say we need a striker, are you feeling like we need somebody who will be a starter, or somebody who's going to be an understudy to Muniz?
I think it's someone who's going to compete with him for that starting berth. I think I don't want a situation when it was like Muniz and Mitrovic where he's just there. He's there as a backup. I want to bring someone in who's going to push Muniz, but obviously Muniz would be the starting player at the moment. There's no one who immediately jumps out at me, but I think it is a case of I want someone in who's coming in thinking they can start, as opposed to someone who's just coming in as a backup, because I think there's a completely different mentality between the two sort of players.
Yeah, no, I think that makes total sense. We've got a few Rodrigo Muniz questions here, Jack. Kenzo asks, if Rodrigo keeps up his form to the end of the season, what should we do, keep or sell? His price has skyrocketed, and if so much, how do you think we'd be able to get? It goes on to add, I would personally keep. I just love the bloke. I mean, yeah, I guess to summarise, if Muniz were to go on the market, how much do you think Fulham would get for him? He's 22 years old. Hot streak, sort of turned a lot of heads in the footballing world. It's a bit of a tricky one because it's like maybe like not enough long term evidence to warrant something, an enormous fee. But yeah, what are you thinking? You're cringing, Lizzie.
Only a little bit.
I think that for starters, keep, absolutely keep. But in terms of how much we'd get for him, I think you're right in terms of the fact of it is very, you know, short term in terms of the fact of he's scored 8 goals since the turn of the year, but since then, or before that, you know, no one outside of Fulham had particularly heard of him. Obviously he's got time on his side, he's only 22. I don't think we'd necessarily be able to, you know, demand a massive fee. Maybe something in the region of like, I don't know, like 20, 25 million. I actually genuinely don't think we'd get too much for him just because it is such a short term thing. But either way, even if we got offered that, I would be like, no, keep him.
I'm afraid he's not for sale. As I was reading out that question, I saw Elizabeth wince a little bit. Is that because the thought of even entertaining the thought of selling him is just so unfathomable that you would not want to do it?
Yeah, I don't like it. He's our player. I don't want him to go. And I was thinking, oh, how much? And then I was thinking, you know, the sums that Brighton have sold their players to people like Liverpool and Chelsea for, well, mostly Chelsea. I'm thinking, you know, is he worth more than, you know, your Mark Cucurella, maybe? And I was like, no, because he's off 50 million. He's obviously not worth 50 million. He's worth a lot more to us than he would be to any other team, especially considering like the point that he's at in his life. I don't want to be patronising, but he's very young. He's only sort of just adjusting to English now, it seems. He's only just giving his first interviews in English this year. He clearly has a really good community at Fulham. And I think moving to a bigger club where there's a lot more competition, I don't see why that would benefit him. And it would really, really damage us. So, yeah, he's worth a lot more than to us, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. He's not for sale. So anyone considering, any club considering putting in an offer can sod off as far as we're concerned. Dom, Black, White and Fred says, Timmy Chestnut's probably had his worst game for us since joining yesterday. Kenny came on and looked like he'd never been away. Are we sure we are all in on Castagna? What do you think about this debate?
I think one thing you got to compare is obviously Castagna was away of Belgium. He played against England on Tuesday night as well. I think with base my when I think about Castagna and Tete, I think Tete's got the ability to play better, but Castagna's probably more consistent. So Castagna, you're probably looking at no more than a six out of seven out of ten, but he's a 6 or 7 out of 10 every game. Whereas Kenny Tete can be an 8 or a 9 out of 10, but sometimes he can be a 5 or a 6. So I think that's the way I look at it. I've always been pro Tete as opposed to pro Castagna. I've always been in that camp. But I think the international break is what I'd probably put it down to. You know, although Belgium didn't play their first team against Ireland, to travel to Dublin, travel back to London, playing on Tuesday night, then going back to Fulham and then going up to Sheffield. So I think it's nothing to be too concerned about. But I personally want to see Kenny Tete sort of starting more games.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough. Or even just like we said earlier, having that strength and depth and having a bit of rotation, bringing Tete in for certain games, I would be open to seeing. I mean, I love Tete. I adore him and I really do hope that he stays. But I don't think Castagna dropped that much of a stinker yesterday. Obviously, gave away the free kick, which led to their third goal. But other than that, it wasn't too... diabolical. So yeah, nothing to be worried about, as you said, Dom. One final question before we move on to a quick Nottingham Forest preview. James Wilson asks, how confused must Middlesbrough fans be? Which really made me laugh. Does anyone know here any Middlesbrough fans?
Yeah, I know a few. I haven't spoken to them about it yet, but I might bring it up next time I see them. if he continues his streak, it'll be interesting talking to them at the Euros in Germany.
Yeah. What about you,
well, you're Lizzie? Saying how confused must Middlesbrough fans be? How confused must Fulham fans from October be? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, touche. I need to drop a line to a few of my smoggy mates and see what they have to say, because it's just got us collectively scratching our heads, but in the best way possible. Very short turnaround until Nottingham Forest on Tuesday. Dom, you said you were going earlier, didn't you?
I am indeed.
Do you not want us to win?
Well, I was there when we won there last season, mate. So we'll see what happens. But in regards to my luck this season, yeah, it probably means we won't get a result, and then we'll beat Newcastle when I'm not going on Saturday. But the thing that's annoying me, why can't these games just be Good Friday and Easter Monday? Like, I know there's Premier League midweeks all across next week, but it's just. What? Why not? Why just make it Good Friday and Easter Monday? Both games on bank holidays. Job done. I don't need to get home at 2 a.m. and then wake up at 7 a.m. for work the next day.
Yeah, touché. I was there last year. Probably my favourite away day of the year last year.
Yeah, I'd say it was the best away day of the year. I would say that obviously Solomon goal against Brighton was the best moment. But in regard to the actual away day, I would say Forest was the best, because I think it was just for the international break, because obviously there was only one international break in the autumn of last season because of the Qatar World Cup, and it was the last game before that, and it was just a great way to go into it. Harrison Reece scoring his first goal. It felt like ages since we'd come from behind to win a Premier League game, and you know, people, the whole sort of chat about us and Forest going into the season, it was good to get a win to shut the pundits up. But yeah, I'm hoping for a repeat obviously on Tuesday, because they're not doing too good this season, and hopefully we can pile some misery on.
What's your prediction, Jack? How do you think we're going to set up for this one? Score prediction. I want to hear the lot.
Oh God! In terms of our lineup, I'd probably make a couple of changes. I think I'd bring Tete in just to, you know, fresh legs there. Maybe look to bring TC into the middle of the park as well. Other than that, unless there's any kind of injuries or anything, I wouldn't necessarily change anything. Forest are a bit of a weird side. Obviously, they sacked Steve Cooper, then brought in Nuno, and I actually don't think they're any better off with Nuno. Obviously, they've got the points deduction, but on paper, they've got some decent players. I think Iwobi's a decent Premier League number nine. I like Anthony Elanga. So yeah, I mean. it just depends what Fulham turns up, whether it's 86 minute Fulham or whether it's minute 60 to 75 Fulham turn up. I'll back us though. I'll go 2-1. I'll go with a narrow win.
Lizzie, I think that the result on Saturday, even though we didn't lose, will act as a bit of a kick up the arse in terms of the way that we set up. I think we're going to have a very different atmosphere to welcome us. I think that most of the Sheffield United fan base had kind of accepted that it's over. And yes, they're arguably fighting for their lives, but I mean, like, how much can you when, you know, the fate is, you know, staring down the barrel of the gun in the way that they are? Whereas I think Forest, obviously, they're teetering right on the edge and they're very much still in the dogfight. And I feel like the team will be aware of that and hopefully set up and have that same sort of level of concentration and fight that we had in the Tottenham game, the fight we had in the Brighton game. But yeah, how do you see this one panning out? It's, as Jack said, Nottingham Forest are a very strange team. You never know which one you're going to get on the day. What's your take?
Well, I'd never back a team that isn't us. I'd never say, oh, I think Forest are going to win this, even if I did. I don't know. We're so bad away from home. Like, it's actually, our away results this season are embarrassing. Obviously, Man U does a lot to gloss over what has been such a shocking record away from home so far. But even teams that we should have done away with easily, teams like Burnley, for example, Sheffield United yesterday, even like Palace when we played them earlier in the season, I remember just thinking, we're lacking so much composure and so much bite. So I wonder whether, you know, we'll be able to translate that. But I hope that yesterday was a wake-up call and that we're able to set up in not only a more organised way, but a more elegant way and be able to play through them, because we are a better team than them. And if they're fighting for their lives, they are A, going to be more nervous, but B, are probably going to have to come at us a little bit, which will, I think, benefit us in some ways, because there'll be more gaps for us to exploit. We'll see. I think we'll win, but our away form this season has been so bad that I wouldn't be that surprised if it wasn't the case.
Dom, I will see you in the Trent. I think there's a pub called the Trent, isn't there? What's the
Trent point? Navigation Inn, I think, is the one you want. But no, I'll be in Hooters, obviously. So
it's the only Hooters in the UK, isn't it?
They are, but they're building one in Salford, I believe. So Man United away, you can go there as well.
Oh, you get a chance to flash out your loyalty card, Dom. But I shall see you at the ground then. Lizzie, before we wrap up, is there a three-word review that you'd like to name this podcast with?
There is. I like them a lot. A lot of blade puns. I think we're going to have to go with random Fulham stuffs, scissors defeat blades.
Yeah, it was one to remember, shall we say. And I hope that everyone who's travelling up to Tuesday is greeted with an equally nutty game of football. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Easter weekend. Thank you very much, Jack, for your time, my good man.
Cheers. Thank you, mate.
Don Betts, always a pleasure, mate.
No worries, mate.
And thank you, Lizzie.
Always a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
Sam, we'll be back on Thursday with a review of Nottingham Forest. But yeah, until then, have a great week and come on your wives.